Wes was in his second year at LBI. The first year I was there with him as a graduate from high school and then right into Bible school before college. And somehow we just struck up a friendship. School wasn't that large, so we knew everybody. And he was from Alaska, so I knew some friends in Alaska. So when I came back, for some reason, either school was out, or I'm not sure what the reason was, when he got that telegram, I was there on the campus. By the way, Dad was the president at the time, so we lived three blocks away, so that wasn't unusual for me to be there. And I was seeing other friends there, too, who were there for the second year. And Wes showed me this telegram, and it said, call collect to the Howe Sound Mining Company. I said, well, let's do it. And so they had two phone booths sitting side by side, and they're about 2.5-3 feet square. And we both got in, and he held the phone far enough away between our two ears and made the call, collect. And I always thought it was to New York for their home office, but now I'm finding out it was to was it Salt Lake City? Salt Lake City, I think it was now. And should I talk about the call itself?
You bet. Yeah. We want to hear all about it. Well, every word.
From my best recollection, it was they said, are you in a position to accept Holden Village on behalf of the school, Lutherans? And Wes said, well, and he just kind of stuttered. And then they said, we'll throw in a tugboat and two barges. And again, Wes kind of hem and hawed. And he said, well, we'll also throw in a road grader and a snowplow. At that, Wes, all he could say was, he'd get back to them and call them back. He needed to discuss this a little bit more with others.
Had you known before he showed you that telegram that he had been writing or making this request?
I don't recall that he had showed us that, because I think he had done two other letters previous to this last one, so three letters in all. So I think that, I don't recall knowing about it.
I think it's kind of interesting that you remember them offering those additional items, because have you noticed the letter next to the registration office saying we're going to give you the village, but unfortunately we don't, you know, you won't be getting the barge, et cetera, et cetera?
I had not seen that letter, and someone called it to my attention last night.
Uh-huh.
And that's funny, it was mentioned in there because that's what the offer was.
Yeah, because I had inferred from that letter that Wes had been asking not only for the village but for all those other accoutrements, but originally they were offered.
It was a come on to buy the, take the property over.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then your father was E.V. Stein.
Yes, Eugene Valentine Stein.
Okay.
He was born on Valentine's Day. That's where he gets the, that's where the V came from.
And what did people call him, E.V. or?
E.V.S. Eugene. Gene, G-E-N-E.
Okay. Friends would call him Gene. E.V.S. So did you go with Wes when Wes went and said, here's what I've done? Were you there for that meeting?
The dad said when Wes showed him the telegram and I vouched for the phone call, dad said that we should at least go up and take a look at it. So I asked if I could go along, and Dave Thorson is a business manager. He had a 16-foot boat, if I remember the size right. I'm not sure the size of the motor, but he and then another LBA professor, Pastor Irma Lunder, and then Wes and myself, there were five of us that parked it at 25 Mile Creek, and got in the 16-footer and kind of overloaded, but we brought our sleeping bags. It was very windy that day, and the water was rough. And so it took the longest time for the first hour to just fight these waves. We were hugging the shore, I remember that. And then we either rounded a bend or the wind stopped, and so the rest of the way was very calm. When I got to Lucerne, we parked the boat, and then we asked the owners of that resort if we could pay them to drive us up to the Holden. And they acknowledged they agreed to do that. And then we asked them if they would come and meet us the next day to bring us back down. That 11 miles was too much to hike, we assumed.
A lot of people do it.
I understand that.
Going back to your dad's, that quote that you mentioned on the website, and in I found it in Lutz's book, where he was quoted as saying, initially thought it was phony and ridiculous, or words to that effect. Was that when Wes initially proposed it to him?
It's probably a side comment to Wes along the way. But, not every day you get offered a village. You know, a ghost town, basically, is what it was. We looked at it as a ghost town. But yet he was adventurous enough to say, let's go look at it. Mm-hmm. And so he might have said those comments. I don't recall those comments, but I read them there. But
at the same time, he felt he needed to pursue it.
Yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dad was heavy in the youth business, youth camp business, back in Minnesota, and he encouraged it. He's been speaker at many youth camps over the years in his younger days. So he acknowledged that there's a possibility for that.
Hmm. So then last night you told about spending that night. You stayed in the hospital?
Hospital, we did. And what a setting. It was full moon, and the moon was touching the peaks of the different mountains. I don't remember the name of the Buckskin and Copper, whatever the mountains were over there. And it just bounced from peak to peak. It's hidden and then it comes back, and just spectacular.
And that's when everyone was convinced this is it?
Well, you understand for where they're coming from. I was a kid, Wes was a kid, basically, and there are three basically teachers at a Bible school. So we weren't professionals in that field. But from our vantage point of who we were, we just thought that it was an outstanding opportunity that should be looked at further. Beautiful setting. Couldn't beat it.
I here's what Lutz wrote, that Randy became an immediate promoter. So were you kind of pushing your dad along a little bit?
Yeah, and on the way back on the boat, we asked, okay, what's the next step? And Dad said, well, you get to find an electrician, a carpenter, a contractor, possibly a plumber. And I said, okay, I'll try and find these. Wes was going to a camp shortly thereafter, the Volunteer America camp for the summer. And so the other men had other responsibilities. So I just said, this is something I can do. And I had a commitment in a few weeks to go wheat farming in eastern Oregon, Pendleton. And so, yes, I was enthusiastic about it. It's something that he couldn't let go. If something is this possible, let's make sure it's is possible before we rule it out. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I was very enthusiastic to pull the fellows together to make it work.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead and describe feasibility study.
I contacted all the people I knew that either had relations with builders or electricians. And I spent about a week trying to make contact with everybody. And I just got zero or no response, or I'll think about it or pray about it. And so finally, about a week before I was supposed to go to Oregon, I said, I can't do this. It's I can't find anybody to do this. And so when I gave up, I told Dad that I give up. I said, I can't find anybody. It's up to you to do something. And then about 1 hour later, I got a call from Pastor Bob Rieke, who was a Lutheran pastor at Glendale Lutheran Church, South Seattle, who was chairman of the LBI board. I'd called him earlier for ideas. He called me and said, I've got an electrician for you, and he's willing to go next weekend. Well, next weekend was the only weekend I could go because of the wheat farm responsibility, and that was Father's Day weekend. I think it was June 19th, I think, if I looked it up recently. That weekend anyway. And so then...
That would have been 1960.
1960, yes. And then with that, I asked others who might know of other... I got back on the phone again trying to contact carpenter, businessman who would be a developer of property and so on. And Dad said there's another LBI board member who used to be a contractor, but now he's in the fuel business, Gil Berg. And I had known of Gil, so I contacted Gil, and he says, come on over. So I went over to his house, and he asked his wife if he could be excused. They had some family plans for Father's Day, and she said, go ahead. And so he agreed to come along for that weekend. But in one condition, he said, I want my friend Vic Nelson to go with me. And Vic, I knew Vic because he was my Sunday school teacher earlier at Fanny Ridge Lutheran in Seattle. And Vic was owned Victor Nelson Furs downtown Seattle. It had nothing to do with construction or electricity or anything else, but they were friends, and so that was fine. And Vic said, I got a friend that I want to bring with me, Ed Autumn. Ed was a school teacher in the Seattle public school system. OTT, it's either OM or UM. Okay. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Then, so we had the team of Gil, Vic, Ed, and this electrician. I've been trying to think of his name, and I can't remember his name, from Glendale Lutheran. He's passed away several years ago. So we got in a boat again. There's five of us. We took Lady of the Lake from Chelan. I'm not remember if it was Chelan or 24 Mile Creek. And we came up, 24 Mile Creek, I think it was. And we came up to Holden and or Lucerne, and we had the same owner of the resort then agree to take us up here and then to meet us the next day so that we could catch Lady back on down, Lady Lake back down. When they got up here, they all just left the bags on the side of the road, and we just split apart in every direction. They went to look at different things and different buildings, see what's here, and just came back for whatever dinner we had prepared for ourselves. And they all agreed that the buildings were in fantastic shape. They're designed in... and some architectural office someplace. So these weren't just slapped together. They were professionally designed and just such good shape. The miners' village down the road, the houses down there were falling apart. Snow damage and intruder damage and theft. But these series of buildings, the 14 chalets and the lodges and so on, were all excellent condition. Did I mention the first time that we stayed here, we stayed in the hospital? Did I put that in there?
Yes.
Okay.
Watching the movie.
Right.
One thing you mentioned last night that you didn't talk about relative to that stay, or one of the stays, was the mice and rats, the sounds
of the night. That was the first. No, that was the third one.
Okay.
And that night we stayed in, when they went back, so just continue with the trip here.
Please do.
When they went back, that group of five went back, then Gil had talked to my dad, and they agreed to accept give us 2 weeks to put together a committee, feasibility committee. Gil was going to do that, working with, in conjunction with LBI.
When you say they were going to give you 2 weeks, are you talking about
House Sound Company? Agreed to give LBI 2 weeks to decide if they want to do it or not. Mm-hmm. Because apparently others were pursuing asking for this same offer to receive
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. How did the word get out?
I don't know. I don't know.
But all of a sudden they had other organizations, church organizations,
right.
saying, we'll take it.
Yeah.
And so how did manage to convince House Sound to give them some time to assess the situation?
I don't know. Maybe just the fact that we've been up there twice,
mm-hmm.
and we've got a group of men, so let's just give us two more weeks to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we understood that the building was, the property was originally offered to, or not offered, they were trying to sell it for $100,000. And they, I understand the Boy Scouts were looking at it, Seattle or King County Juvenile system was looking at it for a correction center for kids. And also we heard there was a nudist colony that was looking at it. But LBI got the offer, and then Gilbert went to work full-time, basically, on trying to make this thing work under LBI originally and then the broader Lutheran Church. And during the process, Gil became, with his work, when they took it over, he became the mayor of Holden Village for honorary mayor for 2 or 3 years, just as a title. Mm-hmm. But credit really has to go to Gil to put this thing together. Mm-hmm.
Your father's situation, though, you talked about, and I'm sorry I couldn't find it in my notes, but you talked about a level of anxiety and a lot of meetings in this rush, you know, this pressure to make the decisions. What were the things that were concerning him?
Yeah, I was off wheat farming mm-hmm. by this time. So my brother, Nate, in this DVD, he's the one that's saying on the agony of do we take on something this large? It's a small school, Lutheran Bible Institute, started in 1945 in Seattle. And so you can actually jeopardize the whole institution by taking on something like this underneath its wing. As we look at it now with the lawsuit society we live in, if someone came up here and stubbed their toe or broke a leg or something like that in one of the buildings, and LBI owned it, they could actually go back and attack the main campus building. So he took a big gamble, the school did, in accepting this. Is that what you're referring to? That sort of thing, the anguish. So there was a lot of discussion. My sister even mentions it too in the video. She remembered that at home. She was 15 at the time, I think. Nate was a LBI student at the LBI, and so he remembers it much better than I, because I was wheat farming during that time.
So Gilbert put together the structure, and you went back into the picture when you finished up your summer job.
Yeah. And so towards the middle of August, wheat farming was over with, and I was getting ready for college back to PLU. And I got in touch with Gil when I got back and heard the progress. And they said, since we own it now, we need someone up there to kind of secure the place because people are walking off with different things, and we don't want anyone to... Campers are coming across from Darrington over the mountains, and hunters are up here. So there's a chance of someone... They're staying in some of the lodges and some of the houses, and so there's a chance of fire. And so they wanted someone to protect it. So my brother and I agreed, Tim, and I agreed to... He was... probably 15 years old at the time, 16, 17, maybe 17 years old. He agreed to come with me and be here for, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks to kind of lock the place down. Tim refers to the movie that we stopped in the sheriff's office on the way here, told him what we were going to do, and we were deputized to be security or watchmen up here. Because it was national forest property and so on. We came up in Lady Lake and again got the people to transport us from Lucerne up here. We didn't know how long we were going to be here, so we were kind of on our own waiting for someone to come back down and get us, bring us back down at the end. I don't recall how that went. But when we got here, we moved into lodge number one, chalet number one. I think we brought beds down from the hospital. And we cooked a big pot of big kettle from the kitchen, and we cooked on the front deck with wood that we found. Oh, I should go back. Let's go back to when I got off the lay of the lake for Tim and I. We understood that there was a man who's going to be at the Holden Dock, which is about 1,000 feet north of the present loading dock, the then present loading dock for the Lave the Lake. And they're supposed to have the keys to Holden. And so we saw, when we got off the boat, we saw at the other dock down the road a tugboat that was pulling away from the dock. And so we ran and carried our bags, and I whistled as loud as I could. I finally got his attention, and he knew what he was supposed to do then. So he circled the tugboat around, made a circle around, came close to the dock, and threw this large ring of keys, 6 inches around, I'm sure it was, and it was full of keys, and it landed right beside us on the dock. And with that, that was the last Holden's House on Mining Company's touch with Holden in that sense of physical being here. Then when we were up here, we used the time to try to find the keys and label them. Inspected a lot of the buildings.
So the buildings had been locked up?
They had, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But apparently broken into it.
Some of them were open, that's correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But very little damage, no graffiti. And I see today it's respected too. I see very little graffiti around here, hardly anything.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so talk a little bit about day-to-day life as watchman for this ghost town, because that's kind of how you were viewing it at the time as a ghost town, right?
Yeah. Well, the hikers would walk through, so we'd tell them to take a look, but to please leave behind everything that they found here. But in the kitchen, for instance, the tables were still set with plates and silver, glasses, dust on them, dust around, but still sitting there. I remember the ice cream nook, ice cream container was on wheels, and it was in one corner of the building, We opened up the lids, and there were still ice cream remnants in there, dried, but remnants in there. That's 4 years later, 3 years later, 57 to 60, 3 years later. And the scoops were on top in a bucket, like they had water in them at one time. We went downstairs, and in the freezing compartment, or the storage areas downstairs, had the big door locks. We found cereal, cold cereal boxes. And those boxes that had sugar in them, or the cereal that was sugar-contained, had a tin foil wrapped around them just for protection of the sugar. And they were all intact. The mice didn't, rats didn't touch them. But the ones that were no sugar, the mice and rats had scattered them all over the place. The boxes were all over the place, and they'd eaten that cereal. So we had treats for the times we were up there. We enjoyed that food.
Had you packed up all your own food?
We did, yeah.
For several weeks?
Potentially, cans and so on. Yeah. One thing we did do, we brought some milk with us, and we knew that wouldn't last, so we went down to the stream, and moved some rocks around, put a shelter for our cold storage down there in the stream. And we had rice most of the nights when we ate here. And I vividly recall pouring the milk on the rice one time and then eating it. And it was just totally sour. And I regurgitated the whole thing. And just for years afterwards, I couldn't touch rice. The memory was just too vivid. At night when we were sleeping there, we could hear the mice and rats in the room. And Tim had brought along a .22 rifle, and we didn't know what we were going to anticipate up here, whether it's bears or whether it's cougars or anything up here. So at target practice, we brought some targets along too to shoot. So I had a flashlight, and so we'd figure about where the rats or mice, the rats were, this one. Mice got the taken care of with the traps, but we figured the rats were the sound, and so I shined a flashlight up there, and Tim would pull off a trigger, and we'd drop a few rats during our stay up here. And what Tim says is we should go up and look in chalet number one, probably find some bullet holes still in the wall.
Did you see, what other kinds of wildlife did you see? Were there deer in the village?
There were, yeah. There were, yeah. It was, yeah. And then we did walk up to, again, up to all the way up to the ball field. But is that ball field still have the baseball?
The backstop?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, used to have backstop there, too.
Yeah. And it's been turned into a labyrinth now.
Oh, okay.
And will next become a staging area for the remediation.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah. The miners' camp, I guess it's called Winston Camp, mm-hmm. Miners' Village. One thing that particularly struck me there was as the snow would crush the roofs on some of these homes, they were built by the miners themselves, so they didn't have the same construction safeguards that the main Holden Village did. The snow would crush them down, and some were broken into just by vandals, but there were some that were left untouched. And we looked in the window, and on almost all these that I remember, they had a Bible sitting on the kitchen table right there in view from the window. And I mentioned, too, that I use that today whenever we leave the house all these years since. We put a Bible out. But it's still by household insurance. Man, of lack of faith, true faith.
You also talked about the signs of how quickly people left, that there would still be clothes hanging.
Oh, there were, yeah. And then these lodges here too, and one chalets, mm-hmm. there were clothes in those lodges, mm-hmm. And books. Yes, there must have been some kind of a hurry up deadline to get out, or at least they didn't tell the employees until the last minute, or the employees just figured I don't need this luggage anymore, or this equipment, or clothing anymore. But there was a sudden, it's like it'd been a ghost movie you see on TV or in a movie theater.
Yeah. Yeah. And then your venture into the mine, how did you arrange that?
It was in 61. We came back, this is my fourth trip back then, it was in 61. And the only thing I recall about that trip is that
let me get the trip straight.
The first one was with Wes Priebe and Dad at uh-huh. LBI. Mm-hmm. The second one was with Gilbert, brought Gilbert and the facilities, those analysis people up here,
okay.
Experts. The third one was as a watchman
okay.
with
so,
Tim. That was all in 60. All those were in 60.
Okay.
In 61, I came back for just a visit, and Gilbert was here managing at that time. And I think there were other groups in and out that first year. And then they had a caretaker, some kind of caretaker, either at the mine or down here. And I had asked him if I could go into the mine and take a look, mine shaft. And he said, well, we're not supposed to do that, but he says, okay. And so the mine was not the shaft door was not totally sealed off as it was now. There were a couple boards across it, but you could walk through them. And there's a padlock, I think, maybe on it. And so he took me. We brought flashlights in there. And you can see we passed the railroad cars, the railroad tracks in there, the small, took the miners halfway in the mine, took some of the material out. So we walked past that. And then the darkness of the shaft, I recall it being maybe 7 feet tall. And we probably walked about a half mile. You could hear dripping of the water as we went, and our voices echoed. And then we got to one room on the right-hand side, and it opened up into this gigantic cavity in the mountain. Like a Seattle,
the Kingdom,
which is no longer there, but it was that large, and we put the flashlight up. There were some bats flying around, but the water was dripping, and our voices really echoed in that stage. at that stage. Just so impressive that that's all that had to be drilled out and dynamited out and hauled out to be processed for the ore, copper, and the gold and silver. Yeah.
So if that was your fourth trip, and you said this is your fifth trip,
51 years later.
Wow. Now, later, I hope that you'll recap your life's adventure since Holden, but I'm curious that you were able to leave Holden behind or didn't get more involved. There was obviously a fork in the road for you there.
I was in college. After college, I did the military stint, the reserve program, and then I got involved with international students, foreign military, and went back to Washington, D.C., and lived there for 12 years. And then embassy personnel back there, too, and part of that. And then we came back here in to the Seattle area in 76. After the National Bicentennial Celebration back in D.C. And just been involved in business and other relations and been following Holden. We took a trip up here. My son and I took a boat, and we're going to come up here. And halfway here, just before the mountain pass, the trailer broke down. And so we had to reverse plans, and that got canceled. So I always wanted to bring the family up, but it's the first time my wife has been up here.
And tell me about your father a little bit more after Holden. Did he ever talk about that event, his role in creating Holden Village as it is? Did he reminisce at our ponder what might have been, if he'd decided differently? Was there ever any discussion?
I just remember him thanking me for pursuing it, thanking the Lord for sending Gilbert and the others along to take the load off of the LBI responsibility, which after about a year, I understand it was transferred, or 2 years, been transferred over to a independent nonprofit, Holden Village Inc., or it's a 501c3. Mm-hmm. He had his hands full. He was president of a school, and that was where his calling was.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever come up again?
I think he did two or three times. I think he taught up here.
Oh.
He was on the board of Holden for a little while.
Oh.
I think Holden was, LBI was given two positions, I think, Erman Linder and Dad were two original on the board,
mm-hmm.
two or three
as
positions.
As it was originally structured.
Right.
So he continued his involvement?
As it progressed, right.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And tell me about the rest of his life. Did he stay with LBI until retirement?
He was there 25 years, and then he accepted a call, retired there, accepted a call to Bethel Lutheran, Richmond Beach Lutheran Church, assistant pastor, and then Bethel Lutheran in Shoreline, both of those in Shoreline. And then Central Lutheran in Everett as his final parish.
And he died?
He passed away in 91, at age 81.
And was your mother ever up here or involved?
I don't know. My mother, blood mother, passed away at age 54.
Oh.
And so Dad, it was 25th anniversary, mm-hmm. and then Dad remarried a few years later to a parish worker from Minnesota, and he was married to her for 25 years before he passed mm-hmm. away. Mm-hmm. So he had two silver anniversaries.
Wow.
I don't know if she came up or not.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure Joel and I were talking about the video that you made, and
mm-hmm.
I wanted to make sure that we got a record of the names of everyone in the video and how they came in the family order. So the first person was Tim, right?
On the video, Tim was, yes.
Yeah. And so tell me the names of your brothers and sisters in order of age.
I'm number one.
Okay.
Randy one. Mm-hmm. Nate is number two. Nathan?
Okay.
Number
Nathan.
Two, yes. Mm-hmm. And then Tim?
Mm-hmm.
Then Eunice? And then Victor.
Okay. And so Tim was alone, and then Nathan is the physician?
Yes, and his and wife, Linda.
Okay.
And her mother was the first cook up here.
Okay.
Bertha Pearson. Bertha Pearson.
Mother. Bertha Pearson.
Yeah.
I think she's mentioned in Lutz's book.
Yeah.
And then you had Eunice and Victor together.
Yes.
And then the other couple were the Trudells.
Trudells.
And their names?
Terry and I think it's Charlene or Charmaine. Char, we go by.
Char.
Trudell.
Longtime family friends.
They are.
And they've been quite involved with Holden throughout the years.
30 years, he said.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's 29, just about 30, he says, yeah.
Great. How does it feel to be back here? What were your initial reactions when you arrived here 51 years later?
The buildings haven't changed. They're still here structurally, and that's good to see.
Mm-hmm.
Structurally sound. The roads have been widened, I think thanks to the mining operation presently are working on that. The little delicacies, the little artwork, shouldn't say little, but from little to big, as compared to the buildings, they're little in a sense. But that's really heartening to see of the heart that's gone into this place over the years, the people. And then to know that this summer you've had averaged 400 people at any given time here. I understand a lot of percentage of them are volunteers, but they're here, they're working, they're giving. That's the heart of the campus. That's the heart of the ministry. And that's truly heartening. That's the biggest impression, I think. And then to be faithful to the gospel, faithful to the calling of the LBI and the Lutheran Church, and you aren't compromising Christ at all through the beauty of all that's here, all the expressions. Through the various expressions, you're not compromising Christ. In Christ's message. And God in all his glory and all his creativity is being emphasized and proclaimed. That's heartening.
Mm-hmm. So you're not disappointed?
Absolutely not.
Were there surprises?
I've been following what Holden's been doing in a sense, so I guess the biggest surprise was Fields Landing. Fields Point, Fields Landing?
I agree.
That amazing. That was just a welcome, what a setting to introduce Holden Village. It was just that whole place. I didn't know that Holden owned that and it operates that whole setting down there. And it's that was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see how the ferry boat, the Lady of the Lake, has shifted their location from 25 Mile Creek to this landing now,
mm-hmm.
and then done away with the one and just have landing up here, let done away with the Lucerne landing, and use this as the main one. So the recognition that Holden's gotten over the years, received over the years from the community, from the government, is amazing. That's probably the biggest surprise. It's an established institution now.
One of the early directors who you've read about, Carol Hinderly, Werner Jansen, the longtime business manager who worked with him, said Carol had said something to the effect that he hoped when the Holy Spirit was finished with Holden that the village would disappear quickly. Do you think the Holy Spirit is anywhere near finished with Holden?
Interesting comment. That's I knew Carol fairly well. That's very deep thought there. No, it's very alive. Holy Spirit's very alive and active here. And I think is growing in the hearts of people who visit, from young and old. And the pull that it has of the different denominations, it's not just restricted to Lutherans, obviously. But whether they walk across as independents, as with no faith, any of the other faiths, traditions, they're welcome here, which is beautiful.
You talked a little bit about the work that you have done last night, and I wondered if you would finish out by going through that, the episodes of your life since you were the watchman at Holden Village.
I finished college. Dad at LBI was in those days it was called intersynodical, different, the Missouri Synod, the American Lutheran Church, the different versions of the Lutheran Church. LBI kind of was representative to all of those. And I remember growing up, someone who would say, a pastor would say, I'm not recommending LBI for my kids because it's too pietistical. And then the very next week, he came home and said, I said, how'd it go? And he said, well, such as the pastor said, he's not recommending LBI because it's not pietistical enough. And I remember Dad saying, Dad, why don't you bang their heads together, you know, and come out with, you know, can you please anyone, type of thing. And so I grew up with the idea of you're not just funneled in one rifle shot. It's more of a scattered shotgun approach. And so when I went to PLU after LBI, but I went one semester down to Westmont College, which is an independent school, like offshoot of Wheaton in Santa Barbara, California. And I got a little bit more taste of a broader Christian perspective than just the Lutherans. And so after college, I did the military stint with the idea of going into the seminary. But I got sidetracked in that route by meeting some people with a group called International Students Incorporated who worked from a Christian point of view to internationals. And he said, if you ever, before you go to seminary, you get locked into 4 years of seminary. When you finish college, he said, have you ever met a Muslim, a Hindu, a Buddhist? And I said, well, no. And he said, well, you know, they're out there in the world. Why don't you work with foreign students for a while to get a feel of this, rather than just get plugged into the Lutheran way? So that, I guess, exposed me to then a broader picture. And I went to work with them when I got out of the military, and went to, also in, I took the military, I took Special Forces reserve training, so I jumped school. And in jump school, I met several of the foreign troops from India and other places who were training at with American troops. So in San Francisco, I was working with the foreign students there, and then he had me, I just got out of the service, he had me go up to Travis Air Force Base, introduced me to the Chinese liaison officer who was welcoming all the troops from his country and others from the Orient who were stationed at 100 different bases throughout the United States. There's 10,000 troops coming to train here in the United States, at least in those days it was. And met him from privates to generals, and they were at Travis Air Force Base for about a day or two while they got their next shipping out instructions to these other bases. And I'd take him down to San Francisco and through the bridges and so on and into Chinatown. And when I'd pay for the toll going over the bridge, the foreign officer asked me, "Does the government pay you back for that?" And I said, "No, church people, friends are paying me to do this." If I had said the government's paying back for it, then I'm an agent of the government, and then my friendship is basically a government a spy type of relationship. I'm paid to host everything. So it's from the heart. And so that taught me a lot of lessons later in life. And so with that, then I started meeting these people, and I figured they're going to be scattered all throughout the base. I've got to go throughout all these bases and meet with Christians in different places so I can say, "I've got a friend in that town. I've got a friend in that town. I've got a friend in that town." So when you get there, you call this friend, and then you get off the base and get into homes and get into churches, because a lot of the countries, they can't go into churches in their own countries, or they don't have the opportunity. And so I ended up in Washington, D.C. I took it to the presidential prayer breakfast end of January. And anyway, I was supposed to come back to San Francisco, Travis Air Force Base, and set up a little friendship house, but never made it back. So I was in D.C. for 12 years and working with the foreign military, foreign students, International Students Incorporated, and foreign military, and ended up with working with the embassy personnel and also with the prayer breakfast movement. And I actually set up a resort type of a camp setting outside of Washington, D.C. for embassy families out there called Mayo International Center. And
Mayo
International Center on Chesapeake Bay. And we had 76 different embassies that said they would cooperate and be part of this. We're matching with American families. We ran that for about 3 or 4 years, and State Department made us certain promises. We were attached to the White House through one of the JC organization people who was working under them, National Past President for JCs. So when Watergate came along, this fellow was working for Colson, so we had to close doors at that stage. So then I went to work in Capitol Hill and installed the first mini computer in the House of Representatives, a 3M Linolex it was called. And then my wife was working for Senator Magnuson from the state of Washington, and she had some friends who working for Thompson Home, Women's Home for secretaries on Capitol Hill, and they were down their numbers, so we knew that the pages, congressional pages, were having problems in the housing. And so I asked if they would wing off a section and we could put mail pages in there. So which we did, worked with a doorkeeper of the House and the Sergeant of Arms of the Senate, and were able to put mail pages in. It's the first organized housing in the... First organized housing for congressional pages. Now they have a full dormitory back there. So we enjoyed our years back there. I was state president for the JCs, and we loved GC, but in 76, after the bicentennial, we came back here to Seattle.
And you're living in Shoreline?
Shoreline, yes. Yeah. Sold computers for 10 years, and then for the last 19 years, I was director of called a place called Camp Brotherhood up by Arlington, Interfaith Retreat Center, started by a rabbi and priest, Father Tracy and Rabbi Levine. And over the years, we've had a Christian staff, but we've also added Muslims to the board, two Muslim clergymen. So it's a true interfaith retreat center.
And are you retired from that now?
About 3 years ago.
Yeah. What a career.
It's been fun.
Thank you so much for going through all this again. Did we leave anything out?
I don't know.
Yeah. Could I ask a question?
Shoot away.
You talked about being caretakers up here. How was Wes a caretaker up here as well?
After when we quit left up here, Wes followed us up here. I think he was here that winter.
About 60, 61.
I think so, yes. Yeah. I think it was by himself, I think, and he just, at least a good portion of that winter, at least the fall, I know he was here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what Josh Post has written in Lola Dean's book that just came out.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
He apparently had an interview with Wes that... Okay. Did you have any contact later on in life with Wes?
I did. I called him two or three times.